Hello, I'm your host, Erin Gruwell, and welcome to the Freedom Writers Podcast. Today's show features my conversation with Lucas Hamkin, a Greenlandic student author from our new book, Dear Freedom Writer, and his former headmaster and Freedom Writer teacher, Torbjørn Ødegaard. We discuss the linguistic challenges faced by students in Greenland, and how Torbjørn and Lucas braved the COVID-19 pandemic in their rural village. And most excitingly, the pride that Lucas feels as the author of letter 43, Speaking My Mother Tongue in Dear Freedom Writer. This episode is a fascinating look into how language and culture impact Indigenous students. And I hope it will leave you feeling enlightened and empowered to make a difference. When the Freedom Writers and I first published the Freedom Writers Diary, we had no idea how far our story would travel. As it turns out, our message of acceptance, hope, and equity is universal, and we have found like-minded teachers around the world. That's why when the Freedom Writers and I started hosting teacher training institutes, we knew the importance of inviting international teachers from every corner of the globe to join us. Torbjørn became a Freedom Writer teacher in the summer of 2013. At the time, Torbjørn was working as an educator in his home country of Denmark. During our nearly decade-long friendship, I've had the unique opportunity to visit him and students in Denmark. Torbjørn later took a unique position as the headmaster of a school in a remote village in Greenland, bringing his passion for students and his dedication to education with him to better serve students. When the Freedom Writers and I were beginning to gather stories for Dear Freedom Writer, Torbjørn introduced us to the amazing students he served in Eastern Greenland. I was immediately intrigued by the unique challenges Torbjørn students face, including polar bear encounters, harsh weather conditions, and as we would come to learn, language differences that make the school system difficult. Ultimately, Lucas, one of Torbjørn's East Greenlandic students, was selected to become a student author in Dear Freedom Writer. Like many of his classmates, Lucas grew up speaking East Greenlandic at home, yet struggled in school because the classes were taught in West Greenlandic, Danish, and English. Lucas bravely shared his struggle in our book, and I'm so excited to have him on the show today to discuss his story further with translation assistance from Torbjørn. Without further ado, here is my conversation with Torbjørn and Lucas. Torbjørn, I am fascinated that as an educator, you decided to leave Denmark to be a headmaster of an Indigenous school in Greenland. I consider myself quite a world traveler, but I have not been to Greenland. So for myself and others who have not had this beautiful fascination and traveled there for the last 40 years, tell us a little bit about this country that keeps wooing you back.
Well, first of all, it have been part of the United Danish Kingdom for more than 300 years now, which means that we all in Denmark and in Greenland have a lot of things in common, although we are very different. There's a lot of family bonds, there's a lot of educational bonds, there's a lot of economical bonds. So a lot of Danes have quite a strong feeling for Greenland because it is a very special country. It's extremely beautiful with the mountains and the ice and the water and so on. So a lot of us are very, very fascinated by the country and love to go there.
So is the monetary system and the language Danish, or is it Greenlandic?
The monetary system is Danish, but they use their own language because when the missionaries started to go to Greenland 300 years ago, they realized that we cannot speak Danish to the Greenlanders. We have to learn their language. So they started to learn the Greenlandic language. They started to translate the Bible and the Gospels and so on into Greenlandic. So they preserve the Greenlandic language. If you go to Inuit in US, Canada, Australia, and so on, you'll often see that they had to leave the language and start speaking English, but we didn't do that in Greenland. We preserved the language.
As you know, We have an incredibly difficult letter and response from someone who is Indigenous from Canada. And they're grappling with some of that intergenerational trauma. So I think what's been amazing with Dear Freedom Writer is it's almost like an anthropological study of the globe. And I've learned so much from the storytellers who are just telling their narrative. So I want to hear more about your narrative. You decided to be a headmaster in an Indigenous community. So tell me about the excitement of taking this position, committing an amount of time to leave your family and friends and move there.
Well, first of all, you have to realize that this is one of the most remote places in the world. To get there, you have to fly to Iceland, which is easy. And from there, take a small Twin Otter or King Air. It's a very small airplane, 1.5 hours straight north. And then you hit the easternmost point of Greenland, where there's a small gravel airfield and some barracks, and that's it. And then from there, you have to go a quarter of an hour by helicopter to a small town with 350 people altogether, a school with about 50 to 55 students, 8 teachers and the headmaster. And the nearest community in Greenland, that is about 800 kilometers, 500 miles away. So it is extremely difficult to get there. More expensive than going from Europe to Australia or something like that. It's about the most expensive travel you can do. And we are part of a bigger municipality where Nuuk, the capital of Greenland, is also the capital of the greater municipality, which is about 1,500 kilometers away and 2 time zones away. We had 2 ships coming up a year with supplies. With all the food supplies.
Two ships. You said two ships.
Two ships. One in the end of July and one in the middle of September. And then we had to live from that, from whatever they brought.
Wow. So what is that like when it's 2 ships a year and the stuff that you have wanted and coveted doesn't come? You wait another 6 months?
It's just like Christmas. Everybody is just so excited. The first ship is coming, and when the second ship is leaving again, it's just goodbye. And all the hunters are having, or everybody is having rifles, so they're shooting the rifles and making fireworks to say goodbye to the ship when it leaves. And then it's quiet and nice for the whole winter.
So if you only have 2 ships with supplies twice a year, the Greenlandic folk that you are working with and teaching beside are very crafty at farming and fishing and hunting. And so tell our listeners, what is the food that your students and your neighbors would consume between those 2 shipments?
Traditional Greenlandic food, it would be meat that you hunt. So it would be musk oxes, mainly narwhals, probably. And that's about what you can get there, plus polar bears, seals, walrus, things like that. And the traditional diet is 100% meat, because you can't grow anything there.
It's wow.
Nothing.
So no citrus, no green leafy vegetables?
No.
And do they have any access to citrus or vegetables?
You can find some plants, flowers in the mountains that you can eat, but that would be much less than 1% of the total diet for a year. But now with the ships, we can get anything frozen or fresh. We were actually quite well off during the corona because we had flights twice a week, but they stopped the passengers' flights, but they were still obliged to fly with the mail and packages and so on. So they took out the seats of the airplane and stuffed them with fresh vegetables and fruits. So for the months when I stayed up there, where everything was closed down due to corona, we had a feast because we had a lot of things we never had before. A lot of fresh food. So we actually enjoyed it, and we were completely sealed off from the rest of the world. So there were no risks to us.
When the world was sealed off because of coronavirus and we were working on Dear Freedom Writer, there was something so exciting and liberating of having you and Lucas and his family and all these other authors in all these other places coming together. I mean, it was something that I think made it more beautiful because we were kind of closed off from the rest of the world. But technology brought us together. So what has it been like to get technology into a village that only has 350 people?
It's difficult, but it's more expensive than difficult. So we had Wi-Fi and it worked and we had it on the school. We could have it privately, but it was extremely expensive. On the west coast of Greenland, in the bigger cities, when they closed the schools for Corona, they could give the students iPads and they could work on that. But we couldn't, first of all, we didn't have the iPads. And second, we couldn't ask the students to work on iPads and Wi-Fi from home because it would simply be too expensive. And that would be to add extra taxes to the parents, and we were not allowed to do that. So why don't we just start going to school again? Because when we were sealed off from the rest of the world, all the schools in Greenland were closed and students were sent home. But I argued very much to upwards in the system that, well, we are sealed off and nothing can happen to us. And if anyone is coming in, everybody would know it. And we were allowed to do that. So it took us 2 weeks and then we were back to normal schooling because we were not in danger of anything.
That's amazing, because I would assume in a city of 350, was there any outbreak at all? Did a single person get coronavirus in this village of 350?
No.
Not a single person. Wow.
We were completely sealed off. There were no way to get it. So we were very safe.
So while you were sealed off and safe from the world, one of the things that you were a part of that is so amazing is selecting a student to share a story and doing so that you would allow them to tell their story however they wanted to tell it. So can you talk about the story that Lucas ultimately writes about?
Yeah, because in Greenland, there are different dialects of the Inuit language. And in East Greenland, they speak a very special dialect that is often very far from the main Inuit language of the West Coast. But all teaching in the school had to be in West Greenlandic. So for Lucas and for the other students in my town, they were speaking East Greenlandic at home. When they came to school in grade one, they were met with three languages that they didn't understand: the West Greenlandic, Danish, and English, and they were supposed not to speak their own language.
Wow. So for Lucas, what I loved in his story is language is not his strength. And this was not an easy process. For you, language is your strength. How many languages do you speak, Torbjörn?
Well, English, a little bit of German, Norwegian, I understand Swedish. Yeah.
So we're taking like five or six languages.
Yeah.
For Lucas, it wasn't easy then, and it's still not easy. So I think that what his story was so beautiful for the reader, for myself even, was having great sympathy for always feeling behind, because he never felt like he caught up. So can you talk about that? Because you were the headmaster of the school. Did you have sympathy for these sweet kids like Lucas who just never felt that they were catching up?
Yeah, of course, because I could see it was not only Lucas, it was nearly all of the kids that had the same problems, struggling in the same way. To all of them, that was very, very difficult. And later on, it was difficult for them to travel to the West Coast because of their language, but they had to do it. The West Greenlanders saw that they were speaking in a childish way, so they were laughing at them. So they were facing language problems all the way through their schooling.
What I love that you did, though, in your response, Lucas essentially writes a letter in Dear Freedom Writer, and his question is, you know, addressing this very conversation about why am I learning these things if I can't use it when I need to go hunt and fish. And I love that you gave him really practical advice as a respondent to his letter, because you see both sides. So tell our audience some of the practical things that were your response to Lucas's question.
Well, my main response was political, because this is a political problem. So I asked him to go to the students' board of the school
and get the board in on this problem. They could work with it. They could go to the new headmaster. They could go to the parents' board of the school and say, we have a problem here. Please help us do something about it. And he could go on to the administration in the municipality, or he could go on to the government, to the Department of Education. There's no limit to what a child can do in this way, or especially if he can organize the school board and get a kind of movement going on. Part of it would be they could start using their own language, at least in the beginning, grade 1, 2, 3, and then only gradually turn or introduce West Greenlandic, so that the students start out in school in a language they understand, so they get familiar with learning, with the do's and don'ts in the school in their own language. It's so much easier to communicate when you can use your own language. So that would be a start. And another thing would be to have a curriculum that is a little bit more focused on hunting traditions.
I love that both of you wrote about that. What I found fascinating about Lucas's letter and your response was, in these summer months, how critical it is for especially these young men to leave their village, leave the home, and go on this journey of finding food to bring back to the family for those winter months. So can you talk about this journey between June and September that these kids embark on?
Anthropologists, they talk about schooling and education. So schooling is what is happening when they go to school, like kids do. And then education is in the summertime when they go with the families. They stay in tents, far away from the city, in the fjords and the mountains, and they go hunting, and they live a traditional life. And that is education. And that is, by a lot of Greenlanders, valued much more than schooling. But they have to live in the town. They have to earn money because they need house, they need food, and so on. So everybody is doing what they need to do during the winter. And then they live in the summertime.
In America, it's so funny, when we get to the end of a school year, kids are counting weeks, days, hours, minutes, until it's summer. It's this break. But I can imagine for the East Greenlandic kids, they are, you know, counting weeks, hours, days, so they can have their education. Their education sounds so much more meaningful to them than just having a traditional summer break.
Yeah, it is. Because they learn about the animals, they learn how to behave in the mountains, how to protect themselves from the weather, how to use a gun, how to, stay alive and get food on the table.
I have another question just about emotions. As freedom writers, sometimes we've been asked to go to communities in the winter that don't have a lot of sunlight. And specifically for me, it was Alaska. And there had been a community that had really suffered with a rise of suicide. And there was a lot of feeling that maybe it was because they weren't getting enough vitamin D. They were starting their school day and it was dark, and the school day was over and it was dark. So they didn't have enough vitamin D. So we talked a lot about seasonal affective disorder. Because this is a community that has a lot of winter, do they have seasonal affective disorder during the winter? Is that something that has not really been a problem in Greenland?
I think it used to be, and of course the dark period, we had 2 months where we didn't see the sun.
What? Say that out. Yeah. Say that again. So 2 months, there was no sunlight.
No sunlight, but we had light because the sun is just under the horizon. So even during the Christmas, when it was the most dark, I could go skiing for 3 hours in the middle of the day because it was light enough to do that. So it's not completely darkness for 2 months, but we had a lot of darkness for 2 months. And then, of course, in the summertime, we had 2 months of 24 hours a day of sunshine.
I did not realize this. See, I told you I'm your student. So it is literally 2 months of darkness and then 2 months of light?
Yes. So altogether, we have at least the same amount of light as everybody else, but it's just distributed a little bit different.
Wow. So when there is that 2 months of light, is that part of the hunting season?
Yes, it is. And for many people, that is actually more difficult than the darkness, because it's difficult to sleep when it's so light, especially when the school is off. You don't have a clock, you don't have a watch to guide you, you don't need to have that. So you can stay up, you can see kids playing in the middle of what is the night. And that's difficult. And a lot of people actually get some kind of mental disorder from too much light. It's much easier in the winter because you can turn on light, you can regulate it nowadays by electricity. So you have the light you need and you can turn off and you can have a nice good sleep in the night because it's dark. But you can't do that in summer. So summer times can be very hard. I love it. I'd love to have so much light. We don't have midnight sun in Denmark, but we have a lot of light now too. And I love it. But it can be hard when you cannot sleep because you have the sun coming into your bedroom.
For readers of our story, I almost wanted to have a disclaimer because Lucas writes about the plethora of food that he brings back to his family. And polar bear was one of the laundry list of food items he brings back to his family. So would you say that the majority of the meats and fish that the 350 people in your community consume comes from their own hunting efforts?
For a lot of people, they do. Of course, the professional hunters, they make more meat than they can eat themselves in the family. So they sell it or give it away or whatever to other people. So when I needed fresh meat, mainly musk ox meat, I had to buy it from someone. But that was easy. Normally, there were plenty of meat in town. And one of my teachers, she was married to a hunter, probably with the most polar bear kills. He had 300 polar bear kills. And the wife, the teacher of my school, prepared nearly all the 300 skins. So she was the best teacher for this subject in the whole world, probably. So, of course, I had to use her for teaching the kids how to prepare polar bear skin. And that's important because that's recognizing their culture, their way of life. And we're taking it into school and showing them that, well, it's not all math and English and stuff like that. We can also teach what is valuable to you and your culture and from where you come.
Mm. I love that you said valuable, because I think that's what Lucas's story ultimately represents, is everyone has value.
Yeah.
And when you strip their value because you strip their voice, you know, people feel that I'm not worthy. So I just think that having Lucas be a part of this process is taking a very simplistic subject that's not simple at all. And it's teaching us about schooling and education and the value in both, and teaching young people to be political.
I hope so.
So, Torbjørn, can you ask Lucas how difficult that was not speaking his native tongue at school?
Yeah. Kan du fortælle os noget om, hvor svært det var at starte i første klasse og ikke måtte tale østgrønlandsk, men kun vestgrønlandsk?
Det var en veldig god ord.
He's thinking about it. It seems to be a very difficult question with a lot of feelings.
Han har også lige i starten fortalt, at han startede.
He's telling that it was very difficult in the lesson to speak, to talk, because they were forced to speak West Greenlandic. And that meant that during the lesson they were almost silent, and then they were speaking with the friends when they had the time off, the breaks, and they could speak there. But in the classroom, they didn't say very much, because it just sounded awful to them or difficult.
Torbjørn, they were never punished for speaking their own language to each other on breaks or after school, right? That was never a penalty.
No.
Could you ask Lucas to describe the wonderful differences between the summer, when there's sun between June and October, and the Arctic time between October and June? Some of the differences for him in Greenland.
First of all, in the summertime, you have sunshine 24 hours a day, so it's light all time. And in winter, it's not completely dark, but you have darkness and no sun for a very long time. So that's one of the main differences, of course. The very good thing about the summertime is that you don't have to go to bed because you don't have to get up tomorrow for school. So you can stay out, you can do whatever you want. And the parents let the children do that. So they are not very restrictive. There's no homework to do. You don't have to sleep at certain times. You can sleep when you're tired. So you can go out hunting or fishing or what you like, whenever you like it. So it's really, you're free in that way.
Can you ask Lucas about the culture of fishing and hunting and when he was taught, what age and what does that look like for the young folks of East Greenland?
Yeah. Lucas, hvordan oplærte I at være, I at gå på fangst?
Jamen, der er meget godt i vej, og der er meget kommende med i, og man kan spille lidt med i det.
Okay. It's actually not his father, but his grandfather who taught him how to hunt. Because his grandfather were a professional hunter for many, many years, for all his life.
What is the traditional hunting and fishing season? When does that traditionally start with families and when does it traditionally end?
That depends on the animals that you are hunting. Lucas have been hunting for seal, and that's year-round. In the wintertime, they can do it with nets under the ice to catch them, which he likes very much. And different types of birds, geese, are coming in May, June. They're traveling north, Iceland or further south in America. I'm not sure where they come from. And other small birds have been hunting. So that depends on the season of the animal when they're doing whatever. In late winter or in spring, early summer, they take trout in the rivers and lakes. They can fish them through the ice.
Torbjørn, didn't Lucas just do a birthday hunt? And can he explain what that was like? And is that something they do every year for a birthday hunt? Or is it just, does his birthday just happen to fall in the summer?
It's his birthday today, so it's just...
His birthday is today!
Yeah.
And he's with us.
He's with us, yes.
So what would be a traditional birthday celebration if he wasn't making a podcast with us?
Ah, hvordan vil du holde, hvordan holder I normalt fødselsdag?
En gang til, der med den ytterste måde.
Normally, if there were potatoes in the shop and fresh eggs, they would have, they would cast a big party for everybody, and they would come and have Greenlandic food, which is muskox and fish and whatever. But there were no potatoes in the shop right now, and probably they won't be there until August. So it was a much smaller party today because the shop was nearly empty.
Oh, can you ask Lucas, what does it feel like to have participated in a book that is translated in a language that is not his first, second, or third language? But what does it feel like to be part of something that in other countries is going to be celebrated?
Lucas, vær blevet forfatter I en bog, som skrevet på engelsk.
Har du gerne mod din? Kan I, hvis I ikke man børn, har du gjort det? Du.
First of all, Aaron, he's very happy that he were able to express the language problem and to show the rest of the world that this kind of problems also exist in Greenland. So he feels very good about that. And he have been talking with some of his friends, some of the people at the boarding place in Nuuk, where he have stayed, about the book. And Mette, she's a teacher, so she have put it on the teacher's Facebook, and she's been speaking very much about it to everyone. So it's out there in some way in Greenland. A lot of people will be aware of it now.
So Torbjørn, I'm going to ask him two last questions. Can you ask him with the book he will reach a global audience, but he will also reach a global audience with a podcast that it's listened to in over 100 countries. So since he has this platform and this wonderful opportunity to share, what is the most important thing that he wants people who are not from Greenland to know about his country, his language, or his story?
Vi skal vide om Grønland. The population of Greenland is very, very small compared to the rest of the world. And therefore, their language is very important to them because that is what defines them as a people up against all the rest of the world. So language is a great part of the culture and what they are as a people of Greenland.
I love that. Toby, my last question for Lucas on his birthday is, what is his hope for the future of his story and the future of his people?
Yeah. Hvad er dit håb, Lucas, for fremtiden? One of his hopes is that not only that the West Greenlanders will accept the East Greenlandic language, but that East Greenlandic is actually also taught to West Greenlanders, so they understand the language more. So it's not only a kind of a one-way thing, but that they all learn about each other's language within Greenland.
I love that. Torbjörn, that was my list of questions. Is there anything that Lucas feels he needs to add, or does he feel that he was able to say everything he needed to say?
He was just about to say something, so okay. I just listened. Yeah? Hvad vil du sige, Lucas?
Han siger også meget vigtigt i sidst modersmål.
He also hopes that in the school, in the lessons, they can use their own language, their mother tongue, both in the lessons and for the final exams, because it's difficult to make exams in a language which is not your own.
I'm so grateful to Torbjörn and Lucas for sharing with us unique challenges that students in Greenland face. My dear listeners, may we learn to use language to build bridges, not walls. May we strive to create inclusive environments in our schools where all students feel valued, respected, and seen. And in honor of today's guest, Lucas and Torbjörn, may we all have the courage to change the world, one story at a time. That concludes our show this week. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and thank you for being part of our Freedom Writer family. If you'd like to learn more about our new book, Dear Freedom Writer, Stories of Hardship and Hope from the Next Generation, please go to the episode description in your podcast app and click on the links in our show notes. Once again, I'm your host, Aaron Gruwell. This episode was produced and edited by Matt Martin Hall and Rob Falk. Until next time, dear listeners, may you write what needs to be written and tell what needs to be told.